Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 14th of October, 2022. Your readers today are Tom Williams.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And Richard Martin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. Tom and I have edited the paper. We've stepped in following the sad death of Ros Lydiard, who, with her husband Peter, read the Talking newspaper for many years. Here is the notice of her death, which is in this week's Chronicle. It is headed by a lovely picture of Ros, and I'll read the whole lot. Lydiard. Rosalind Evelyn, née Harper, passed away peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, Andover, on Monday the 26th of September 2022, aged 78 years, surrounded by family and friends. Much-loved wife of Peter and mother to Richard. She will be sadly missed by all who knew her, especially those who enjoyed her performances on stage at Week Community Centre, Chesil Theatre, Winchester Theatre Royal, Maskers Theatre Company, and many others. There will be a celebration of Ros's life at Chesil House, Winchester, on Tuesday the 25th of October at 2 p.m. All those who knew and loved her are welcome. Please wear something colourful. Donations to Cancer Research UK can be made at www.steelsfunerals.co.uk. And so we will go on. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your USB box player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now we come to the headlines of the Winchester Chronicle, and we'll go over to Tom for the first headline, please.
The first headline is Crime Concerns at City Centre Car Park. Part of a Winchester multi-storey car park has been hit by a wave of antisocial behaviour. The Hampshire Chronicle has seen graphic footage from the Chesil Street stack, which shows clear signs of Class A drug misuse, widespread graffiti and criminal damage to doors and lighting that plunges the top two stories into darkness at night. The City Council leader, Martin Todd, said the problem was at the highest level that anyone can remember, and that an action plan has been drawn up. The video was shot by local man Chris Thompson, who said he wanted to highlight the issue. Mr. Thompson walks his dogs there and has noticed a sharp rise in antisocial behaviour, especially on the top two floors, which without lights are now very dark at night. I was shocked and disturbed to see how bad it is. It's frustrating to see this again and again. I have kids. This needs to be publicised. Mr. Thompson disputed a regular cleaning claim. The drug paraphernalia was there on Thursday and was there for 4 days over the weekend, he said. The graffiti is fresh, although there are clear signs that previous tagging has been painted over by the council. City Council leader Martin Todd was asked about the general graffiti problem at the council meeting last Wednesday. He said, "I'm a bit obsessed about the question of graffiti. This afternoon we gathered together council officers, police, the youth offending team and BID to talk about how to work better together to deal with graffiti." Mr. Todd said graffiti exploded following the pandemic, but that the council was spending more money tackling the issue. He said the BID had four people spending 4 days a week on graffiti. "We clean the whole of Chesil multi-storey car park every day. We have to remove graffiti almost every day." The evidence from Mr. Thompson's video is that the graffiti is not being cleared every day. But Councillor Todd added, just throwing more resources is not going to solve the problem. The evidence is within the city. We seem to have got on top of it, but in general it remains a serious issue. He says intervention was needed with those graffiti perpetrators, many of whom are children, to divert them away from the crime. A council spokesperson said, we are aware and concerned by the increase in antisocial behaviour in Chesil Street car park and are working in partnership with the police and other agencies to address this situation more robustly. The council's neighbourhood services team trained in the safe removal of drug-related equipment and it is given the highest priority. These items have been removed from the car park and officers have been in touch with the residents to offer assurances we are taking action. We are looking into this particular reporting in situation as to why it wasn't actioned at the speed with which we usually would do it. We would encourage anyone who witnesses anything of concern to contact the police on 101 and report out on our website or visit our website or by calling 01962 840 222. That's 01962 840 222. Councillor Todd told the Chronicle, I'm very aware of the vandalism and other problems at Chesil Street car park and other locations in the city. It's the highest level that anyone can remember, and we've agreed a robust plan which reflects that. We currently have a graffiti removal team going into Chesil 4 days a week, as well as daily cleaning. We are also working through CCTV footage with the police so that the offenders can be identified. We are planning extra CCTV and targeted visitors from council staff and the police at this and other sites until the problem is dealt with.
Museum's bid for £3.7 million revamp. A Winchester museum has begun huge refurbishment plans with the hope of reopening by August 2025. The Gurkha Museum will make its first bid for funding to the National Lottery in November and is expecting to hear whether it's been successful in March 2023. The museum in Peninsula Barracks has been open in its current form for 32 years, with the Gurkha story told predominantly through white British officers. To update the attraction and better reflect Gurkha voices and their stories, the museum is proposing a £3.7 million plan to the National Lottery Heritage Fund. The museum hopes to receive £2 million from the National Lottery and make the rest of costs up through fundraising via corporate sponsors, donations and other trusts. Although early days, the plan is to start work by spring 2024 and be fully refurbished by the 80th anniversary of Victory Over Japan Day, VJ Day, in August 2025. 30 years ago, there was only one Gurkha battalion on rotation based in the United Kingdom, meaning very few Gurkhas and ex-Gurkhas were living here. Now the brigade is based almost entirely in Britain. Director Darren Bauer said, we want a much more interactive museum, more voices telling the narrative, and one where it's not so much a curator or an expert writing a book and leaving it on the wall for people to read. We're not telling the whole story or engaging the Nepali community to the extent we would like to. There are still people alive who served in the 1950s and 60s, but they're getting older. We want to capture their oral histories and include it in a renovated museum while we still have the opportunity. The main thing is that we want more people engaged, whether that's visiting, engaging with our digital content, or actually working with us as volunteers and co-creators. The National Lottery is very demanding. They don't just hand out money. They want to see a very detailed plan that hits some very particular objectives. The key part is having more and a wider range of people involved with heritage. As well as modernising content, the museum plans to update its space
to be more family-friendly. This would mean moving away from the one-way system that takes visitors through the Gurkha timeline, from the Anglo-Nepal War through to post-Second World War conflict, and towards a more open plan space. Mr. Bowyer continued, "What people expect of the museum today is rather different from what they expected 30 years ago. We'd like to see more families, and we find that families prefer a more open plan layout, as you can keep an eye on everyone, but still spread out."
New sites for development. Sites such as a Winchester City Centre car park and the plot of a former country home are down as new areas for development in the latest draft of the local plan. It sets how development, including housing, business construction and infrastructure, will evolve up to 2039. The council has started the engagement stage of its local plan examination, and a draft is being prepared for public consultation where local residents will have their say on the future vision of the district. One key omission was the potential for a new town at Micheldever. A spokesman for O'Flynn Group, the promoters of the land at Micheldever station, said the Winchester local plan process is only at the opening stage, with several years of work still required to get a final adopted plan. We have some fundamental doubts about the basis on which the plan is being progressed, and the decision made in 2021 to protect the rural north of the district from meaningful levels of new housing allocations at the expense of the south of the district, where a disproportionate amount of new housing will be concentrated. In the meantime, we will continue to engage with the local plan process and make the case that our Micheldever station proposals offer a better way of addressing Winchester's long-term housing need. Tessa Robertson is chair of the Dever Society, which was launched to oppose any potential plans. She said, "The good news is that, as we hoped, new settlements are ruled out in the draft document and Micheldever Newtown is not mentioned at all. We hope very much that this will go forward to the Cabinet meeting unchanged." New sites include Sir John Moore Barracks, long earmarked for development, that's been allocated for between 750 and 1,000 houses on an 86-hectare site, an 850-space park and ride facility, and employment provisions have also been allocated. St Peter's Car Park in the city centre has been allocated for 30 houses on a site of 0.44 hectares. Opened some 30 years ago, it was only supposed to have been temporary. The land west of Courtney Road near Abbots Barton has been assigned 100 homes with the provision of a small sports pitch. In Bishop's Waltham, a site to the north of Rareridge Lane has been allocated 100 houses on a 5.2 hectare site. Land at Colden Common Farm has been put forward for 45 houses. Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Place and the Local Plan, said, "We're really grateful for the input people have given so far. It's helped to make the draft plan, better. It's also helped us to tackle three critical priorities, setting the highest environmental standards we can for housing and commercial development, making sure we have tougher standards for affordable housing that developers have to achieve, and going for brownfield first development to protect our countryside. We're looking forward to hearing from residents to help us improve the plan still further." The draft local plan will go to a Cabinet meeting in November for approval before the official public consultation is launched.
So that concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Mundy, Reginald Mundy, at home, aged 88. Former landlord of the Richmond Inn, Portswood, and latterly the Phoenix Inn, Twyford. Hamblin, Alison Gay Hamblin, aged 74. Nutt, Joyce Nutt, aged 96. White, Sheila White, at Southampton General Hospital, aged 91. And finally, Wright, Timothy Tim Wright, after a short illness, aged 71. Christian Comment this week is read by Deborah.
And it's offered by Nigel Hemming, the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church. And he calls it a life well lived. I've always found people fascinating, and I'm a sucker for life stories. In my spare time, I read autobiographies and listen to interviews with people who've achieved great things. I love to hear about someone's journey, the overview of their lives, and understand where they came from, what formed and shaped them, and how they became a success. Most people are not in the public domain, though, and yet many live incredible lives of love and faithfulness. If we get lucky, or if they are in our family or part of our community, then we also get to hear their stories, or even play a small part in them. During the summer, I was invited to share a tribute to my Auntie Anne at her hastily arranged Thanksgiving service. Despite the hopeless inadequacy of trying to summarise 82 years into just 10 minutes, it was such a privilege to reflect on and highlight her humble, consistent and faithful character that I'd witnessed across so many decades. Way before I was born, Anne had worked as a specialist nurse, pioneering care for children with spina bifida. It was the 1960s and expectations of what those children could achieve were low. But Anne was able to arrange sailing trips and all kinds of activities to enlarge their world. One lady now in her 60s who attended the service had been cared for by Anne in hospital from her second day of life. Against the odds, she had made it, and Anne had always referred to her as her miracle baby. Anne married Tony in 1976, and for the next 40-plus years, they would take a daily stroll around their local streets, hand in hand, stopping for a chat, appreciating the gardens, and getting to know the neighbours. As a wife and mother, Anne was well known in the local community. She played the piano for local choirs and school assemblies, even continuing long after her own daughter had grown up. As Christians, they held numerous support roles in their local church, and I was blown away to learn that they had faithfully led the Watford Prayer Meeting for Overseas Missionary Fellowship for an astonishing 35 years. Even after Tony sadly passed away during COVID, Anne, mostly now confined to the house and struggling with her own health, remained a faithful prayer warrior. She regularly said that she was praying for me and for our family and for the church we lead, and I knew that she meant it. Reflecting on her life has reminded me to take time to appreciate the treasure encapsulated in the many ordinary lives around us. We all know people who have inspiring stories, if we can take the time to find out and to appreciate them. And as I reflect on my aunt's profound journey, I am inspired to also become someone whose story can be accurately described as a life well lived. And that was from Nigel Hemmings, senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
And now we come to letters to the editor. And the first letter read by Tom.
Thank you. The first letter is from Jock MacDonald and is headed Question Time. May I ask a few questions of this new government, one of whose MPs represents this constituency of Winchester and Chandler's Ford? Where, Prime Minister, has the climate crisis disappeared to from your agenda? Is not your government the lead government responsible for the last 2 months of this post-COP26 UN climate change year, before COP27? Why then does the PM have plans for growth that trash climate initiatives in agriculture and oil extraction? Is this responsible leadership when the leader seems to change sides? Apart from trumpeting its prowess in placing wind turbines out to sea, the UK did not have much international credibility going into COP26. The rot started when Cameron and the occasional local MP played pretend climate change games by bicycling to Westminster or showing Al Gore's film An Inconvenient Truth, playing it for real was indeed too inconvenient. Showing that the pretense has gone, the PM uses an economic adviser from a lobbying firm which, according to a recent BBC article, inhabits a building containing the offices of a small number of like-minded firms that are in touch with each other. One is Nigel Lawson's infamous Global Warming Policy Foundation, a rich lobbying group that casts doubt on the climate crisis. Lawson's book, published in 2008, An Appeal to Reason, A Cool Look at Global Warming, though tendentious, was a useful tool to evaluate the Stern report that ushered in the Climate Change Act. But now it is totally out of date, and its continued influence so close to government is malignant. Even those very wealthy people, whom it seems to represent, are not likely to survive long after a climate disaster that has left the planet totally ravaged. Climate change and the climate crisis are now facts, facts that must be recognised by all political parties. There will be some different ideas about how to deal with these facts, necessitating the need for a sensible conservative opposition going back to its old environmental roots. But to come close to denying the facts, as Truss does, smacks of Putin, Trump and Bolsonaro. And that is from Jock MacDonald of Stockbridge Road, Winchester.
And the next letter is from James Anderson, entitled Not Her Fault. And I think it refers back to a letter called Recollections Vary from Tommy Geddes in the Chronicle on October the 6th. Prime Minister Truss has done very little so far. Attenuation of energy costs, a reversal of recent national insurance increase, and a penny off income tax to offset the freezing of the tax-free allowance hardly counts as tax cuts. I recollect that the massive money printing exercise known as quantitative easing was a Gordon Brown initiative, a bill of £600 billion. During the COVID emergency, when £200 billion was spent, I recollect Labour roundly condemning that expenditure as not nearly enough. There are consequences. We have known for some time that a stock market correction had to happen. The Bank of England was warned repeatedly that by stalling on interest rates, it was storing up an economic shock. Nor is the United Kingdom alone in this predicament. The EU is in at least as much of a bind. To suggest that Prime Minister Truss is responsible for all this after no time at all in office is frankly comical. If only Labour had a believable plan. But all we get is confected rage. James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Well, at least we are balanced.
Well, you may not think so after this. This letter is called Fairy Tale Leader and comes from Andrew Beadle. Mr. Geddes, in his letter, Chronicle October 6, states that Conservative members are to blame for the election of Liz Truss and what has followed in recent weeks. He's only partly correct, as a significant number of them, 60,000, saw through her fairy tale economics. He's right that Rishi Sunak warned of the economic dangers ahead, but she dismissed them. It was revealing that she was not prepared to justify her policies in an interview with people like Andrew Neil. I'm sure Mr. Geddes has not forgotten that a few years ago, a majority of Labour members voted for Corbyn as leader. Fortunately, in that case, he was never given the chance to govern. Members of political parties are not representative of the electorate at large, and I would like Conservative MPs alone to choose the leader. They are the ones who really know the candidates. Also, if they get it wrong, they have no one else to blame but themselves. Andrew Beadle, Marsdown Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Now, a change of mood. Somebody concerned about speed limits. Simon Lever. Speed limits. I'm fully aware of the complexity of changing speed limits, even to a lower 20 miles per hour. Although 9,500 responses have been received in the Twyford and associated areas, Hampshire County Council is committed to undertaking the task of analysing the feedback. Presumably the majority of people would welcome improved safety facilitated introducing a 20 miles miles per hour speed limit. Action should be taken swiftly. Changing 30 mph signs with a 20 mph sign can't be all that challenging. Perhaps a trial period. I believe that 20 mph speed limits should be imposed on housing estates, for example, Badger Farm, Oliver's Battery and Stanmore, where there are many minor roads. As areas would not... As areas would not expansive, a lower limit would not create congestion. That's what's been written. Further, where there are school crossings, a speed limit would be appropriate and indeed safer. Many motorists ignore the 30-mile-an-hour speed limit. Villages where there are schools and crossings seriously need a lower limit. Such action makes areas safer and more pleasant with less noise and would be welcome. That's from Simon Lever of Badger Farm.
And we're back to politics again with a letter from Chris Gillam entitled Growth, 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 Babble. What I tell you three times is true. The bellman in The Hunting of the Snark is ultimately proved wrong. Liz Truss's irritatingly ridiculous rhetorical device, repetitively spouting meaningless words, will prove equally vacuous. I asked previously if our MP would toe the line like the Vicar of Bray and support this absurd, unpleasant and dangerous Prime Minister, despite her having done everything his preferred candidate warned she would do. And he has, apart from a minor reference to tin ears. Steve Brine leaps to the defence of throwback Thatcherism. Never mind the blatantly false assertion that 31 million working people will be better off as a result of the Kwarteng mini-budget. He waves aside the growth, growth, growth babble with, I find it hard to see how anyone could disagree with growth of our economy as an objective. He should read some modern economics, not the rubbish our leaders are still taught in Oxford, based on childishly simplified physical analogies, without the single precaution of physical models that they obey boundary conditions, but the economics that recognise the limits imposed by finite resources, existential environmental imperatives, and basic social values. Sustainable economic growth was always oxymoronic. Nature does not give us happy examples of perpetual growth. While a tree can grow to maturity in 100 years and live for 1,000, cancer grows until it kills. Nor does GDP, the indicator of growth, the only number our largely innumerate political class cares about, tell us anything about how wealthy, comfortable or happy we are. Indeed, for a very considerable part, GDP is a measure of all the bad things we do to each other, our patrimony and our planet. Robert Kennedy long ago pointed out that GDP measures everything, in short, except that which makes life worthwhile. Even when they worship this number, the politicians can't compute it properly. Truss's very first and frequently repeated recipe for economic success is to build roads. But road building correlates negatively with economic growth afterwards. Perhaps she is secretly a member of that evil anti-growth coalition. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Well, a change of topic. A local road, David Alderson describes. How kind of Councillor Martin Todd to imply that many of our Winchester area residents are insane by wanting to keep the Andover Road open to traffic, Hampshire Chronicle. Two main roads running in parallel would be an act of insanity, quote. Councillor Todd needs to clear his thinking as to what constitutes a main road. The Andover Road is the main road in and out of the north side of Winchester, connecting the city with routes to the north, A34, east and west, A303, M4, and local villages. As main roads do, it collects traffic from local feeder roads and estates, such as Wick, Hairstock and now King's Barton. That is the function of a main road. The road through King's Barton, as the estate's residents have pointed out, is a local road passing close by their front doors, aimed only at serving its residents, as do, for example, Stony Lane and Hairstock Road and other connecting estate roads, none aimed at conveying necessary commercial and other long-distance traffic into and out of the city. These residents have clearly stated that they do not want a main road passing close to their homes. On the matter of encouraging cyclists, that section of the Andover Road which is on some councillors' hit list is mostly wide enough, surely, to incorporate a good cycle track alongside the road, given a little planning, and also supposing the future growth of the number of cyclists is not just an optimistic guess. Or is it possible that, during development, a cycle track can be constructed to pass through King's Barton itself, for which many of these potential cyclists might come? The full opening of a road through King's Barton Estate isn't going to encourage more main road traffic into the city, as Andy Key suggests, other than the good residents of King's Barton itself. The Andover Road has served well since the Romans built it many centuries ago. They weren't insane. Dave Alderson, Cherry Close, South Wanston.
And a complete change of subject, Mark Rowe writes about the positive impact of sport. I write to you about the beautiful game of football. To me, every game I play or watch, I enjoy, no matter the result. I'm blessed to be able to watch and support Liverpool, England, Winchester City Football Club and Solent Sports. When I went to watch Winchester City Football Club, I received my number 8 shirt from the chairman, Ken Raisbeck. This was truly magical, and the wonderful day was capped by Winchester City winning 2-0 against Poole Town in a thrilling match. Football helps me with my mental health. I use it to be confident, to be a confident communicator with people and to socialise. Both Solent Sports and Winchester City Football Club have helped me change my life after a breakdown. I urge anyone to go to watch their local side or join to enjoy the beautiful game, even do the coaching courses. No matter who you support or play, we are all part of the football family. And that is from Mark Rowe.
And that ends the letters. And so we'll go over to first person, please, Richard.
Which comes this week from Khalid Aziz, who finds reasons to be cheerful. Apparently. So, and these are, of course, his views and not the reader's. Now is the winter of our discontent. And how? Sitting comfortably? Of course not. In the words of my late and much missed mother-in-law, when confronting the world's ills, what a bloody mess. Energy looms largest. I write from France, where the government has effectively nationalised electricity and limited bill increases to 4%. Mind you, they have plenty of windmills onshore and off, plus their legacy of nuclear power stations. Unlike us, their governments were unswayed by the miserable bleatings of various environmentalists. Britain lost its world leadership in nuclear. The French became self-sufficient, even exporting electricity to us in our increasing hours of need. Petrol here is subsidised by 25 cents. Before leaving for the ferry, I shall fill up with Sampon at £1.44 a litre. Our new government has got off to a shaky start, naively failing to recognise the toxic optics of lowering the top income tax rate in times of hardship. But they've opened up licences for more hydrocarbon exploration and to fracking. Cue howls from Extinction Rebellion and their fellow travellers. Britain leads the whole of Europe in decarbonisation, and remember, we're only responsible for 2% of the world's CO2 production. It's time for a pause, let others catch up. Meanwhile, the good people of XR, I think that's Extinction Rebellion, should retire to their yurts, superglue themselves to their knitting needles and produce body warmers for the poor, who, thanks to them, face cold ship this winter. At least, for the first time in their misguided lives, these mainly middle-class protesters might actually do something constructive towards improving the lives of their fellow inhabitants on this planet instead of stopping them getting to work. Talking of the middle classes, railway workers, some of them earning in excess of twice the average wage, are at it again, egged on by their rabid leaders, themselves on at least four times the average wage. To lead a rail unit seems you have to be called Mick. They must have them. How their mothers must mourn the given names with which they were christened. Is anyone ever christened Mick? I'm old enough to remember the last really big energy-inspired crisis which triggered the three-day week. Then also the union leaders were called Mick, and then two union spokesmen described pay levels as diabolical. What's really diabolical is there could be a settlement tomorrow if the pay rise could be linked to productivity. Actually, I want railway guards to do less, starting with their diabolical and incessant and unnecessary announcements every 2 minutes. Talk about oversharing. You can't hear yourself think on a train these days, let alone have a conversation. We're not alone in Britain. Fly posters advertise... No, I beg your pardon, in Brittany, rather different. Fly posters advertise a march this Sunday in Paris against la vie chère, the expensive life. Organisers are offering free buses for the five-hour drive to France's capital, apparently oblivious to the irony of such profligacy during an energy crisis. What we all need to do is not protest, but to work harder. Or, in some cases, get back to work. It's not our God-given right to necessarily retire by 65. I and many others are still going. And how is it that in the last 2 years, benefit recipients have gone from 3 to 5 million? It cannot all be down to COVID. Politicians continue in their attempts to infantilise the population and create victims of us all. Victims that can only be saved by the politician's particular brand of snake oil. In reality, governments can only do so much. Ultimately, it is individual positive action that makes complex societies such as ours thrive. As someone a long way away said 60 years ago, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. So, rise up, get going, do something for your fellow man. You've nothing to lose but your poverty.
Well, we have been told. I think we'll go over to an alternative look at the news, please. Belgarum. Would you like to... There are three items from Belgarum. You would like the first one, Tom?
Right. Arthur is the most popular name for baby boys. Arthur is officially the most popular name for baby boys born in Winchester during 2021. Figures from the Office of National Statistics shows 19 newborns were given the name last year. Five more than the previous year's top-ranked Henry. Meanwhile, Amelia, Charlotte and Elsie tops the charts for girls' names in 2021, each being given to 11 babies. Across England and Wales, Noah became the most popular boy's name last year, knocking Oliver down to second place following an eight-year reign. It stood fourth for the most popular in 2020 and has risen 15 places since 2011. George moved down to third most popular name for boys in 2021, but remained the most popular name associated with the royal family for babies born across the two nations last year. Meanwhile, Olivia remained the top pick for baby girls for the sixth year, ahead of Amelia and Isla. Mothers over the age of 35 were more likely to give their babies traditional names such as Thomas, while younger mothers were likely to use shortened versions such as Tommy. New entries in the top 100 names nationally include Lara, Beatrice and Sarah for girls, and Blake, Brody, Kai, Rupert, Tobias and Nathan for boys. It is the first time Jack has not been in the top 10 since the annual series began in 1996. James Tucker of the ONS said, "While Noah and Oliver are enjoying their places at the top, some names could be in danger of falling out of favour."
Winchester Film Festival returns in November. It returns for its 11th season with a new mix of contemporary award-winning short and feature films. The first screening on November the 8th at the Winchester Science Centre, entitled Whispers from Iran, is prompted and inspired by the demonstrations in Iran protesting the death of Mahsa Amini whilst in the custody of the Morality Police. The screening offers five short films by young independent Iranian filmmakers and includes a discussion about censorship in totalitarian regimes and how filmmakers manage to get their message through whilst navigating prohibitive regulations. This event is in partnership with Winchester Film Society. The theme of morality also inspires this year's Z-rated screening, a collection of five morally challenging films that promise to raise vastly different reactions from the audience. The festival will feature award-winning Polish director Aleksandra Topiska, who debuted in Winchester in 2017 with her short film America. This was followed in 2019 with another of multi-award-winning short, The Best Fireworks Ever. Topiska is now considered as one of Poland's brightest young directors, and the festival will premiere her debut feature film, Other People, a fast-paced rap opera about modern society in which pleasure and pain collide.
Science Centre installs a defibrillator. A science attraction has installed a public access defibrillator in its welcome area. Winchester Science Centre shared the news of its defibrillator on Friday, October the 7th. It should be used along with CPR when someone is in cardiac arrest. The device provides a high-energy shock, called defibrillation, to the heart and helps restore a normal heartbeat. The educational venue has installed this defibrillator in its welcome area to be accessible to the centre's first aiders and the public. A spokesperson for Winchester Science Centre said, "No one knows when they may need medical help."
Now this week's announcements. Lighting Up Time ends at Friday, the 14th of October, today, 2022, or it may be, of course, past when it gets to you, at 7:27 a.m., and begins at 6:15 p.m. On the 19th of October, it ends at 7:35 a.m. and begins at 6:05 p.m. And now we go on to items of general news. Over to Tom.
The first item is headed Call to Scrap Road Diversion Plans. A city councillor is pressing for the planned diversion of Andover Road to be scrapped. Councillor Patrick Cunningham said the proposal to divert the main road through the King's Barting estate will be an act of supreme folly. He said a survey of 800 local residents earlier this year showed 92% against the move, which was approved by Hampshire County Council in 2011. Councillor Cunningham, the Conservative member for Wanston and Micheldever, said the area had proposals for further development. In a question at full council, he said, "The continuing industrialisation of Three Maids Hill roundabout A27-A34 area, specifically two inert waste recycling plants, one solar farm, another proposed, and a proposed anaerobic digester progress at pace. Now add the new major development area of 900 dwellings and park and ride at St John Moore Barracks, increased traffic flows and the emerging M3 Junction 9 works in the mix. Can the Cabinet member acknowledge that these multiple developments have profoundly changed the dynamics of the Andover Road North Corridor since the original decision was made over a decade ago? Across the country, residents and local authorities continually fight to build bypasses to divert traffic flows away from densely populated areas. But here in Winchester, you still seek to divert a bypass into a housing estate of 2,000 dwellings through a neighbourhood centre, 92% of over 800 Winchester residents having called for this insanity to stop. As local planning chiefs, you should have led discussions with the developer on the future of Andover Road. It's not too late. Will you do so now?" Councillor leader Martin Todd, Lib Dem, pointed out that the decision to divert was made by the Highway Authority, the Conservative-controlled County Council, which publicly committed to the diversion as recently as February. The obvious time for the City Councillor's Planning Authority to have sought to get Hampshire County Council and Carla Holmes to revisit this realignment was before construction started and both housing and the road system started to be laid down.
Dogs on leads ruling to stay. Dog walkers have been asked to keep their pets on a tight leash to help protect sensitive land surrounding a 12th century almshouse. Residents who regularly walk their pooches through St Cross Farm and Water Meadows were invited to a meeting on Monday night after tension arose over the beauty spot. Signs posted by the hospital, the landowner, and Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust asking owners to keep their dogs on a lead for the safety of livestock, visitors and the surrounding wildlife caused friction amongst locals. However, as people gathered in St Cross Church for a presentation by the Trust, it explained that conservation grazing cattle has played a vital role in maintaining the fast disappearing wet meadows and sustaining its wildlife. The Trust further revealed the cows have played their part in welcoming a new species to the site, the southern damselfly. In a bid to stop the animals from being spooked by a spike in dog walkers and people flouting the rules since the pandemic, it has once again renewed its calls for cooperation while livestock is present. Reserves Officer for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, Rachel Remnant, said, "One of the reasons we took on the site was because of the number of visitors wanting to engage with it and use the footpath. What goes along with this are some of the erosion factors from people running and walking. But also, we saw a huge uptake in the number of dog-related activities we had over lockdown. This was really difficult for a lot of nature reserves and conservation sites because they faced all that pressure of people wanting to get out." Catherine Wake, a trustee at St Cross, added, "We are very keen to find a balance between keeping the cattle that so grace the meadows safe and making it possible for the local dog walking community to enjoy the area." The Wildlife Trust did try to engage with the public in person to explain the reason behind their signs and the need to keep their dogs on a lead at all times, but unfortunately they faced some resistance. "We have therefore decided that going forward there will be a sign on the gate as you enter one of our fields that indicates whether livestock are present, and if they are, all dogs must be kept on a lead and on the footpath." After the meeting, one resident, who wished not to be named, said, "I stopped walking there for a while because I had to keep my dog on a lead and it wasn't ideal for him. If I'd known more about the conservation of the site, I would have completely understood. I think it all comes down to communication." And there is a photograph of the meadow with a few black cattle and a notice saying, "Farm livestock, dogs must be kept on a lead."
This item is headed Grub Club Funding to Help Support Hungry Families. And it's particularly appropriate at this moment because we're actually reading in the venue where all this takes place. Following popular demand, a grub club, which helps families put food on the table, is now running on a permanent basis. Excuse me. Munch, a Winchester-based health eating cafe, launched a grub club at Unit 12 in Winnell in the summer of 2021, offering families six-week blocks twice a year. Now the grub club has announced that it will be available every Thursday from 3:45 to 5:30 in Studio 2 of the community centre, subject to funding. The change follows popular demand from club users. The Community Interest Company focuses on areas like Winnell, Stanmore and Highcliffe to help lower-income families. The Grub Club at Unit 12 supports parents to prepare and cook healthy meals with their children and take home new recipes. Munch coordinator Mary Needham said a lot of the families in Winnell might be suffering with food poverty, fuel poverty, so that's why we do the Grub Club at Unit 12. The families love coming and have built up quite a community. It's primarily about healthy eating, but it's also about community and social inclusion and helping people cook well on a budget. All of our recipes are cooked from scratch, so we try to focus on batch cooking and cooking things that can be frozen. The families that come to us always have a cost of living crisis, so it's not really a new thing for them to try and make ends meet. Obviously, it's worst at the moment, so getting a hot meal once a week is really helpful for them, and then having the recipes to take home is also really helpful to those who have meal plans that can stretch. Anybody that has children will understand that it's quite hard to get the kids to eat healthily sometimes. At the Grub Club, there's a lot less pressure, and children are up there with their peers, so are more likely to get involved and try new foods. Following the club, the outcome has been that kids want to try more food and want to cook the recipes again at home. The not-for-profit organisation manages corporate events and catering and charity events, with all proceeds going towards Munch's social side, including the community cafe and cooking workshops like Grub Club. As well as being self-funded, the community interest company receives financial support from local councils and authorities. Winchester City Councillor and Volunteer Director at Unit 12, John Tippett Cooper, said, "Munch's Grub Club will help so many hard-working families at a time when there is so much pressure on household budgets."
Spotting the superb scarecrows round town. No, you weren't dreaming if you thought you saw King Charles III standing on the balcony of Alresford Community Centre recently. He was there surrounded by bunting in red, white and blue, but he was stuffed with straw, not the real thing. His Majesty was the most prominent of dozens of scarecrows created around the town in the Scarecrow Festival organised by St John's Church. People were encouraged to walk to the through the town, seeing how many they could spot. Autumn has become the season for scarecrow festivals, with similar events in Droxford, Oliver's Battery and Ozzlebury.
The Watercress Line prepares for Harry Potter. Visitors will be able to walk in Harry Potter's footsteps over the railway bridge where the famous wizard received his Hogwarts Express ticket. Wizard Week is returning to the Watercress Line from October the 24th to the 30th. The Heritage Railway will host the Wizard Express steam train, flying lessons, wand making and Halloween fancy dress competitions for children during October half term. The Wizard Express steam train will be open to ride, with passengers able to hop on and off at the stations in Alresford, Ropley, Medstead and Fourmarks and Alton, and pick up sweet treats and refreshments along the way. Young wizards can walk in the footsteps of Harry Potter over the railway bridge where he received his Hogwarts Express ticket in the film. Other activities include the chance to explore the Harry Potter-style coach at Alresford and get up close to creepy crawlies, owls and falcons. It's every day except for Tuesday the 25th and Thursday the 27th. Flying lessons with Professors Slugwind and Apicus will be on offer, as well as wand making at an additional cost, and magic shows held daily at 12:30 and 2:30. For more information or to book tickets, go to watercressline.co.uk.
Tech event for over 65s. A Winchester-based care provider is helping over 65s get more from their tech gadgets. Every Care is hosting a free event for older people and their families to bring their phones, laptops and tablets to learn how to be a more confident tech user. The Office for National Statistics 2021 reported that 3.36 million adults in the UK have never used the internet, suggesting that 46% of adults aged 75 and over still struggle to get online. TechFest 65, as hosted by the Winchester Care Provider, will take place on Thursday, October the 20th, 1:30 to 3:30 at the Ark in Jury Street. The event is designed to help local people get more from their tech gadgets and provide an opportunity to discover how new, simple-to-use devices can help older people live safely and with confidence. A series of hands-on workshops will take place throughout the afternoon, with attendees encouraged to bring their own technological devices to use. While smartphones and tablets are the main focus of the workshop, participants will also be able to explore social media, apps, the internet and more. Tickets are free and can be booked by emailing booking@techfest65.co.uk, always provided that you can access the internet, or phoning Evrycare on 01962 842 548. Evrycare supports older people living at home in Winchester, Twyford, Chandlersfold, Eastleigh, Alresford and Central Hampshire with expert trained home care professionals.
The next item is headed Carve Your Own at Spooktacular Pumpkin Festival. A Hampshire farm shop is hosting its first Spooktacular Pumpkin Festival, welcoming families from across the region to choose and carve their own pumpkins. Westland Farm Shop in Shedfield has been growing more than 8,000 pumpkins ready for its first ever pumpkin festival during October half term. The spooky themed festival will be open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday the 22nd to Sunday the 23rd of October and Friday the 28th to Sunday the 30th. Fields surrounding the Hampshire Farm Shop will be transformed into a sea of pumpkins where visitors will be able to pick from a range of shapes and sizes which they can take home or carve during the festival. Activities such as tractor trailer rides, face painting, games, a Halloween trail and a barbecue will also be on offer throughout the event. Cocktails such as Grim and Tonic, Corpse Mapolitan, or Pina Goulada will be available at a pop-up cocktail bar provided by Three Parts Cocktails. Westland Farm Shop owner Kaylee Collett said, "We are very excited to host our first pumpkin festival and welcome families from across Hampshire to 2 weekends of Halloween fun. Visitors will be able to buy as many pumpkins as they like." And there's a photograph of two young ladies carrying pumpkins.
Alien abductee is set to speak at UFO conference. An author who says she was abducted by aliens and experimented on as a child is working to increase the awareness of UFOs in the South. Tina Bird from Woolston, whose abduction case has been investigated and documented in UFO Truth magazine, is introducing an encounters conference in Bishop's Waltham. The event next year in Jubilee Hall will take place on April the 22nd and 23rd, featuring a number of stars from the world of ufology. Tina said, "Hampshire has been under the UFO spotlight for many years, including sightings, abductions and crop circles. It's the first time in southern England that has seen an event like this, and I'm hoping it'll become a yearly thing. It's mainly to raise awareness and let people know that things do go on in southern England. We're more famous for it than any other part of the country, but they haven't held lectures down here." She says she was abducted at 6 years old while asleep in bed before holes were drilled into her chest and embryos removed from her body. Tina has since been interviewed by American investigative journalist Linda Moulton Howe. Tina, 51, added, "It's not just about abduction, but about what the next step is. We've got millions of people, so they can't all be wrong. Contact has already been made. We've got an alien species coming into our world unrestricted and coming to our air zone unconfronted and coming into our homes. It was not until my late 40s that I came forward, looking for medical advice out of worries as both me and my partner were sick. Looking back now and understanding what happened to me is one thing. Coming to terms with it is another thing altogether. I knew that these poor people who had come forwards, who had suffered this, were not getting help, nor not being protected, and not being believed. In fact, the opposite was happening. All the people who say they are beings of light and love, and they are here to do good. If that is the case, they wouldn't take innocent children when they're at their most vulnerable, asleep in bed, and perform experiments on them, drill holes in their stomach and chest, and take parts from inside them. It's a war crime against humanity."
Meanwhile, back on Earth, A mediation service that would usually charge £150 per party has absorbed all costs due to generous funding. Winchester Mediation Service has cut all costs thanks to funding from the National Lottery and Winchester Rotary. The not-for-profit charity, which tackles residents' disputes in Winchester and surrounding areas, is targeting the free referrals to people who wouldn't normally be able to afford mediation or alternative dispute resolution assistance. The team of professionally trained mediators, who volunteer their time to resolve disputes and then repair neighbourhood relationships, would usually charge £150 per party. Service development manager Jess Hudson said, "We still have an awful lot of capacity to take more referrals, so it's a case of trying to target the individuals we think could benefit the most. We think it would be amazing if we could just take one stressor off the cost of living crisis." There's lots of organisations like Citizens Advice and other charities that are already assisting people in need, and we want to make sure that they're aware of our services. The ability to help more people free of charge is really important, particularly for people like single parents, the elderly, people who work from home, and the kind of people who may not be able to afford the usual services. We obviously would like to be able to offer the free referrals for as long as possible, but it also does depend on response. For more information, go to Winchester Mediation, all one word, .org.
Cycle ride to support hospice. A group of six rode 55 miles to support Winchester Hospice in memory of their friend who died of an aggressive illness. Emma Duchesne, aged 44, died of cancer while receiving palliative care at Winchester Hospice in October 2021. The former Hampshire police worker was one of the first patients at the hospice where she spent her final few weeks. Best friend Alistair Kelly rallied together with a group of Emma's friends and family to take on the London to Brighton bike ride to support the hospice in giving end-of-life care. Alistair, along with Verian Pritchard, Emma's partner, Nicola Duchesne, Emma's sister-in-law, Charles Duchesne, Emma's brother, and school friends Rachel Knott and Charlie Bryant, cycled 55 miles from Clapham Common to Brighton Seafront on September the 11th. With varying abilities, the team completed the ride in 5 to 8 hours, and more than doubled their fundraising target, achieving a grand total of more than £5,500. Alistair from Winchester said, "We went along to the hospice on October the 1st last year, and Emma's mum tried to find out a little more about information to see whether they were able to help out at all. We left on that day feeling that there were options and there were people there to lend support and take us through the next steps. Emma was such an amazing person, and she'd just be amazed by what we've done and what would have loved us giving back to the hospitals. So it was wonderful to do this in her memory. There was a fantastic camaraderie between the six of us, and Emma was a great motivation. We're extremely grateful for the hospice and staff who looked out for her needs. We raised far more than I ever anticipated, and that's from amazing support from Emma's friends and family." The London to Brighton bike ride is the oldest charity bike ride in Europe. Travelling from city to coast, the team had to tackle the hills of the South Downs. To the end of the day before returning home, the group celebrated with drinks and a meal on Brighton seafront. Winchester Hospice, based on Romsey Road, opened in September 2021 to provide specialist palliative and end-of-life care to adults with life-limiting illness from Winchester and the surrounding areas.
Tickets for Boomtown. Tickets are set to go on sale for the next instalment of a huge festival which attracts thousands of people to Winchester. Boomtown, one of the United Kingdom's largest theatre and music festivals, has this week launched the first phase of tickets for its latest incarnation, Chapter 2, the Twin Trail, which will take place in the Matterley Basin of the South Downs National Park from August the 9th to the 13th, 2023. Having returned over the summer following a three-year hiatus, Chapter 1, The Gathering, saw an entirely new layout of the festival, along with new processes for releasing the line-up and a restart of the storylines that attendees have grown to love. Organisers have said the changes were hugely successful, and Boomtown has since released an official after film which provides a glimpse into the pop-up world that is created for just 4 days of the year, attracting 66,000 people from the UK and beyond. Despite facing some of the hottest days of the year, Boomtown citizens descended upon Matterley Basin and enjoyed artists such as Cool and the Gang, Coffee, Drum and Bass Heavyweights Noisier as they performed their final ever UK shows, and a host of worldwide and up-and-coming artists from across the musical spectrum. The lineup was more diverse than ever before, with a 50-50 gender balance across two of the main stages. Next year's tickets will be offered to people on monthly instalment plans to allow for the cost of a ticket to be spread out.
E-scooter risk to the blind. Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond has thrown her support behind a campaign to highlight the risk people with sight loss face from e-scooters. Miss Drummond met up with the charity guide dogs at with the charity guide dogs at Conservative Party conference to discuss the problem with the machines that remain largely illegal on Britain's roads except for a few trial areas. Research by Guide Dogs found that three-quarters of people with sight loss who have encountered an e-scooter have already reported having a negative experience. Half who encountered an e-scooter have changed their behaviour because of them, including not going to some parts of their town.
Gift shop in Antarctica. A newlywed from Hampshire is about to leave her husband and travel to one of the world's most remote places. Natalie Corbett is one of four women who have been chosen to travel to a distant part of Antarctica to take up jobs, including running the world's most remote post office and counting the island's penguins. Natalie will be joined by Claire Ballantyne, Mari Hilton and Lucy Bruzzoni. They beat a record number of applicants to become the team responsible for managing historic site Port Lockery on Goodyear Island. The team will abandon home comforts to live and work in the region without running water or a flushing toilet. Natalie, who will be in charge of running the gift shop, will dub the trip a solo honeymoon. Natalie, who has worked in retail for more than a decade and got married in June, said she could not resist the opportunity to work on the island. Who wouldn't want to spend 5 months working on an island filled with penguins in one of the most remote places on the planet? I'll be leaving behind my husband, George, who I only married in June, so I'm treating this like my solo honeymoon, she said. As well as dealing with sub-zero temperatures and almost constant daylight, the women will share the island with a colony of Gentoo penguins, which Mari will be in charge of monitoring.
A green light for pavilion funding. Civic chiefs have agreed to rescue a project for a new pavilion at the King George V playing fields in Winchester. Costs have soared from £2.3 million to £3.3 million because of inflation and the soaring costs of construction. Approval for the pavilion was granted last year. It will replace two decaying buildings at the Highcliffe Recreation Ground and be a base for women and girls football. The pavilion has wide support, but at the council meeting on Wednesday, Conservative city councillors queried the source of the extra money from the Community Infrastructure Levy, or CIL, imposed on developers. CIL money comes from across the district, yet the new facility will be in Winchester, it has been pointed out. They also queried council priorities. Councillor Fiona Isaac said £1 million is a lot of money to spend in an area when residents and visitors cannot spend a penny in the toilets, referring to a closure of local conveniences. Independent Councillor Judith Clemenson said Is it right to be spending an additional £1 million when we are asking so many people to give up so many things just to make ends meet? Shouldn't we be leading by example and putting on hold such a beneficial but not crucial spending? Council leader Martin Todd said it was not possible to spend CIL money on helping people with the cost of living crisis. He also pointed out that the new pavilion would be used by females from across the district, not just the city. Councillor Todd said two areas that had seen by far the highest CIL payments because of the amount of development are the St Paul's Ward in West Winchester and Bishop's Waltham. Yet both areas have seen relatively little CIL spending, he said. Women and girls football is booming, even before the Lionesses win at the Euros in the summer. Winchester City Flyers has 450 registered players, 22 junior sides and 3 seniors. Councillor Jan Warwick suggested the pavilion should somehow honour Terry Payne, who grew up in nearby streets, played for Winchester City 800 times for Southampton and was a member of the England 1966 World Cup squad. The budgeting of an extra £1 million from CIL contributions was approved with cross-party support.
Record sale for Jane Austen novel. An inscribed copy of a Jane Austen novel has become the most expensive the author's work ever sold, after being bought for a record £375,000. And it's heading for Hampshire. The unique first edition of Emma achieved the highest ever sale price for any printed work by the celebrated novelist. The three-volume edition, which carries the handwritten message "From the Author" inside, will now go on public display for the first time after its American buyer insisted it stay in the UK. It's been deposited at Chawton House, the former home of the novelist's brother Edward, which also houses a unique collection of early women's writing, spanning over 10,000 volumes. Peter Harrington, the London Rare Book dealer, which sold the book, helped connect the buyer to the library on learning of the new owner's wish for the book to remain in England. The deposit ensures the public will have access to this unique presentation copy. It's the only presentation copy of an Austen novel with a written inscription known to exist. As was the custom, the book is inscribed by the publisher rather than Austen herself and was presented to the recipient at the author's request. The author, who died in Winchester, is not known to have signed any of her books herself. All three volumes also bear the recipient Anne Sharp's ownership signature. Published in 1815, Emma was the last of Austen's novels to be published during her lifetime. The author sent one of the 12 special presentation copies of the novel to Anne Sharp, a dear friend of Austen's and governess to her brother's children. Significantly, of all Austen's novels, Emma shows the most awareness of the position of the governess, a decision surely influenced by her friendship with Anne Sharp. There are several echoes of Anne Sharp's social position and character in that of Miss Taylor, whose first name is Anna, in Emma.
A new Hendog mural appears on doomed building. Graffiti artist Hendog has created a new artwork on a doomed building in Winchester. The anonymous artist has painted a teddy bear carrying a stick and a handkerchief containing possessions on the gates of the former Early and Son coal merchants in Chesil Street. The building, not in commercial use since the mid-1980s, is said to be demolished when the Chesil Theatre builds an extension next to its base in the medieval church. The new artwork, which is pictured above the article, also features two posters with words, "Missing, have you seen my bear?" Hendog.
Reduced cutting of roadside verges. Winchester civic chiefs are pressing on with a new greener way of managing roadside verges, despite opposition. There's been a mixed reaction in Alsford and Badger Farm this year after council contractors reduced the number of cuts. That means the grass has grown higher, but it gives a chance for wildflowers to set seed and germinate. Many people welcome the boost to biodiversity, but others say it leaves the verges looking unkempt and can create traffic danger at junctions with impeded sight lines. Councillors on the Heath and Environment, on the Health and Environment Policy Committee have unanimously agreed to continue the scheme and expand it to other areas. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, said, "The pilot was introduced in response to public requests to take a different approach, to reduce the number of cuts and allow wildflowers to grow." She said lessons had been learned, including the need for good communications with local residents to manage expectations, including people who expect to see a wildflower meadow quickly. The contractor has bought a £47,000 specialist cutter that collects the cuttings and so prevents them from boosting the soil nutrients, which favour nettles and grass. Councillor Frank Pearson, ward councillor for Central Mearn Valley, said care was needed at junctions in the countryside, citing Gravel Hill and Spring Vale in Swanmore. Councillor Learney, who represents St Barnabas Ward in West Winchester, said, "At one door, someone says, 'Why are you cutting the grass so often?' And then the next door neighbour says, 'It's a mess. Why aren't you doing it more often?" She said there is guerrilla mowing, with members of the public taking it on themselves to cut the verge if they think the council is not doing it enough. Councillor Brian Laming, representing Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, said the project had divided opinion in his ward this summer. Councillor Jan Warwick, also a ward member for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, said it was an important issue, as 3% of Hampshire is a verge. In a question to full council, Councillor Fiona Isaacs said many people in Alresford were unhappy with the wildflower project and grass cutting in general. Sadly, this year, residents are still very angry and upset about the way they have been left to live in such a mess. Areas once very pretty and cared for are left to grow, with dominant meadow and reed grass being cut once this year.
My one-handed life is inspiring. A fashion enthusiast from Winchester, who used to hide her disability, now embraces her one-handed life and is inspiring others. Kiara Beer had a stroke at 2 years old, causing hemiplegia, weakness down her right side, as well as dyslexia and dystonia. Kiara, 27, studied textiles and surface design at Buckinghamshire New University and loves to share outfits and fashion on Instagram. After always hiding her disabled arm behind her back when she was younger, one day Kiara went ahead and posted a photo she liked that included her disability. The photo kick-started Kiara's journey as a social media influencer and an inspiration to fellow stroke survivors. The textiles student set up a YouTube channel titled Kiara's One-Handed Life, whilst stroke charity Different Strokes recruited the fashion enthusiast to create a series of Instagram reels focused on beauty and fashion. Kiara said, "When I was young, I never wanted to show my arm on Instagram because people can be cruel on the internet. But once I did my first post that showed both my arms, suddenly I was over it and I started posting hashtags like hashtag hemiplegia and hashtag stroke. Pretty soon I started getting a lot of positive engagement because I was talking and posting about my disability. Soon I was getting questions from people all over the world. People encouraged me to put up videos of how I get by with my disability. Now I get messages from people telling me how they or their child have been inspired by my videos, and it's helping them to cope with their own disability." One mother said that her little girl's confidence always improves when she sees me doing the tasks she's struggling to do. She says, "Kiara can do a one-handed ponytail. I will too." Different Strokes hosted a fashion show where all the models were stroke survivors. The event highlighted that makeup and grooming can be a significant issue for stroke survivors. Staff and volunteers helped the models with their hair and makeup. For some, it was the first time they'd had makeup on since having a stroke. Lauren McMillan from Different Strokes said, "Strokes rob people of so many big things, making it easy to overlook the seemingly small everyday losses. Putting your hair up in a ponytail, putting on your makeup, even being able to get into your own jeans is something that most people take for granted."
Tributes are paid after former mayor passes away. Civic chiefs have paid a silent tribute following the death of Susan Glasspool, a former mayor and honorary alderman of Hampshire. Mrs. Glasspool, formerly of Main Road, Itchen Abbas, died on September the 17th, the full council heard. City councillors and officers stood for a moment of reflection at the council meeting on Wednesday, October the 4th. The current mayor, Councillor Derek Green, said Mrs. Glasspool represented the Itchen Valley ward as a Conservative from 1983 to 1999 and served as mayor from 1993 to 1994. She was also a county councillor and was made an honorary alderman by the county council in 2010. He said Mrs. Glasspool, a mother of three, grandmother of nine and great-grandmother of three, had recently moved to Glasgow to be closer to one of her children. The funeral will be at Itchen Abbas Church on Friday, October the 21st at 12:30 p.m. Mrs. Glasspool was thrust into the national spotlight when she was the first sitting local councillor to call for the resignation of Winchester MP John Brown in 1989 when he was embroiled in a parliamentary scandal. The controversy over Mr. Brown tore apart the local Conservative Party for several years. She was married to the late Jim Glasspool, a highly successful businessman and senior member of the Test and Itchen Association.
40 years on from the raising of the Mary Rose by Bruce Parker, a series of events and activities have been planned by the Mary Rose Trust to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the raising of the Henry VIII's flagship from the Solent seabed. Bruce Parker was the BBC's commentator during the three-day television coverage of the momentous event, which attracted an estimated worldwide audience of 60 million. He writes, "Although it's the dramatic raising of the Mary Rose hull itself, which gripped the nation 40 years ago in October 1982, my own association with the Mary Rose had actually begun more than 50 years ago in the early 1970s. I took a phone call in the BBC's Southampton newsroom from Alex McKee, a Portsmouth marine archaeologist. You might like to come and film a Tudor cannon from Henry VIII's flagship that we've raised from the Solent seabed," he told me. "We know it is from Henry VIII's flagship, the Mary Rose." With a television crew, I set off for Southsea Castle. Alex described the circumstances that led to the sinking of the Mary Rose, pointing out the cannon's Henry VIII markings, which confirmed it was part of the Tudor warship's firepower. He ended our TV interview with this. "One day," he said earnestly, "we'll bring her up from the seabed. She's down there with literally thousands of artefacts." I returned to Southampton and told my programme editor that Alex McKee was clearly off his head. "A complete nutter," I think I said. Nothing could be more prosperous, more... I can't get the word out now. Anyway, you know what I mean.
Preposterous,
that's it. Than a wooden ship which sank more than 400 years ago, being recovered from the seabed and then brought ashore. How wrong we all were. As time went by, more and more artefacts were recovered and a distinguished archaeologist, Margaret Rule, was beginning to enthuse about what lay deep down on the Solent seabed. "A Tudor time capsule," she said, "which may well turn out to be the most significant discovery ever around our shores." By the early 1970s, the then Prince Charles had become seriously involved with the project and was soon diving on the wreck himself. In an interview, he described to me the chilling moment when he came face to face with the skull of one of the Mary Rose's crewmen. So it was that 40 years ago, the hull of the Mary Rose was indeed to be raised to the surface on a huge cradle. The rest is now part of history itself. The hull was brought back to the very dockyard where she was launched in Portsmouth 5 centuries ago and sprayed for years with preservative. Tens of thousands of artefacts in stunningly good condition were recovered from the seabed, and the Mary Rose Museum, built completely around the recovered hull, is one of the finest of its kind in Europe, if not the world.
Residents in favour of renewables. An in-person survey saw people on Winchester High Street pick home insulation and the installation of more renewable sources of energy over nuclear energy and fracking. Members of Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis asked the public their favoured solution for addressing the energy crisis. On Saturday, October the 1st, the energy survey stall in St Maurice's Covert as part of Winchester's Green Week. Across 5 hours, members of the public streaming past the busy spot were invited to place milk bottle tops in glass jars, representing 5 possible options for combating the energy crisis. The result from the 110 members was predominantly in favour of insulating homes and using more wind and solar energy. By contrast, fracking, building more nuclear power stations and rationing gas each received less than 10 votes. The informal survey follows the government's removal of the fracking ban after it was suspended in 2019 due to earthquake concerns. Fracking is a technique for recovering gas and oil from shale rock. A seam of shale gas that runs along the South Downs makes Winchester a favourable location for the controversial method of extraction. A total of 5 sites have been permitted for drilling in the city, making Winchester the most affected place in Hampshire. Stewart added, "There's a lot of issues around fracking. We need to move away from using fossil fuels rather than extracting more fossil fuels. The issue with fracking, apart from increasing carbon emissions, is the technology that's used to extract shale gas uses a lot of toxic chemicals at a very high pressure, pumped into rock formations. And those chemicals remain in the rock after the fracking process, as well as issues around earthquakes, which is why fracking was put on hold."
Archaeologist the guest at Cathedral Lecture. The distinguished archaeologist, Professor Martin Biddle, was the principal guest at this year's annual lecture of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. The lecture, attended by several hundred people in the nave online, took the form of an interview by Professor Michael Wood, the well-known television documentary maker, academic and author. Professor Biddle took part in his first proper archaeological dig in 1949, when he was just 12 years old. His connection with Winchester began 60 years ago, when he undertook the first of his excavations in the city, which lasted from 1961 to 1971. The Times has described the Winchester excavations as among the 10 most important in Europe in the last century. It saw the foundation of the Winchester Excavations Committee and the Winchester Research Unit, of which he has been director since 1968. And that bit is accompanied with a photograph of Professors Biddle and Wood with the chairman of the Cathedral Friends, Bruce Parker.
Support shown for homeless charity. Over 100 staff, volunteers and supporters gathered at Winchester College and online on Wednesday, September the 28th for the Winchester Beacon's annual supporter evening. Guests included the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, the Mayor of Winchester and the charity's patron, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester. For more than 30 years, the Winchester Beacon, formerly Winchester Church's night shelter, has been supporting people in Hampshire who are faced with homelessness. Providing more than just a safe and welcoming place to stay, the charity helps each individual to rebuild their life. The evening was an opportunity for the charity's chief executive, Michelle Price, and members of the volunteer board of directors to update supporters on the achievements and challenges of the last 12 months and plans for the future.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Tom Williams.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye. And do enjoy the week ahead.